This week on It's So Bad, we talk about one of the most influential games, and the game that inspired a genre, or probably many genres, and was part of a new wave of video games when it released in 1978, as we add Space Invaders to the endless list here on It's So Bad. And welcome, Chris, Matt, Steve.
Michael, hello.
How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hello there. Doing all right?
We are once again doing our best to social distance. Who knows by the time this is released if we will be free. We probably won't be free.
I was told we're
still doing this.
The country will be open for sure.
I'm on a beach in Florida right now. I don't know where you guys are.
The country is open for business.
Are any of you protesting in Michigan right now?
No, I'm in Minnesota, actually.
Oh.
Ilhan Omar, you know my feelings about her. And my feelings are I love her. But nevertheless, we are adding Space Invaders to the endless list this week. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, etc. We're adding this game to the endless list, which is our list of best games, bad games, good games, everything in between. Currently runs from number one Super Mario 64 to number 74, which is Jurassic Park Trespasser. We're adding Space Invaders this week as our 75th entry onto the endless list. And does somebody want to talk about what this game is, or would you like me to go into that?
Why don't you set us up, Mike?
So, yes, this game is
it's an arcade game your grandma probably played.
Oh, my God.
You don't talk about my grandma like that.
Listen, my grandma does not play arcade games, or did not play arcade games.
Well, her friends were playing it, probably.
Wow. Do you know what year I was born, Matt?
78?
No.
Mike was hanging out with your grandma, Matt. That's what we're saying.
Hell yeah. So, I should mention that I did run across this game in a Salvation Army, the arcade game, the bar top, and that's pretty much why we're talking about this, the cocktail cabinet, because I have it in my house. I bought it for like $300, which was pretty sweet. I wanted to add it before I had to sell it because the depression hit. Essentially.
See if you can trade it for, like, get another two and then trade them for a super off-road machine. That would be a better investment.
Matt, at this point, I could trade it for toilet paper and that'd probably be a good investment as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you'd be a king.
How much toilet paper could I get for Space Invaders cocktail cabinet?
Apparently not enough to, clear the way for the way how Matt feels about this game. I think he would need a lot more toilet paper to wipe through. It sounds like, given his early impressions here.
Yeah, I love the hot takes on old arcade games. That's a strong position.
Yeah, we do add a lot of old arcade games. I do enjoy that, though. So this game was made by Taito, the Japanese developer. It's one of like the earliest Japanese games. Kind of like started a wave of Japanese game development. The gentleman by the name of Tomohiro Nishikado made this game back in 1978. I believe it was first released in 1979. He was a designer, so yes, generally back then it was like one guy.
Damn.
We should talk a little bit about the like perspective here of why this game is super important, and kind of like the like a short brief history of arcade video games in the course of like 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to give it to you. So 1972 is when Pong came out. It kind of became a mainstream success in 73. After that, there was a lot of people who copied what Pong did. So there was a lot of different Pong clones, what people were Everybody was playing Pong. It was very popular. But around that, in the 5 years or 6 years in between when the games came out, when Pong came out and Space Invaders came out, you had games like Tank. Does anybody know what Tank is?
Of course. Tank sucks.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what Tank is.
So it's like a maze, but you play as a tank and you can go around and shoot another tank. And typically these games that you played would be like, person would get 1 point and then another person would get another point. You try to get like the best of three or something like that. There wasn't a lot of score-based games in the 70s. It was a lot of either time limit, so you had a time limit where you play the game, or there was a score limit whenever somebody got to 3 points or got to 2 points. So you had Tank come out, which was that game we were just talking about. There was a game called Gunfight, which is basically like you had two guys on either side of the screen and you could shoot the other person or try to shoot them before they shot you, which was a really, really simple game. There was Seawolf. There was Breakout. Breakout was a big game. Do you guys know what Breakout is?
Yeah.
Kind of similar to Arkanoid, right?
Breakout's dope.
Yeah, so Arkanoid is a Breakout clone.
Yes.
And that Breakout came out in 1976. It was a paddle, just like Pong, but instead of hitting the ball to another paddle, you had to break the blocks. So it was an evolution of what Pong was doing. Space Wars also came out in 1976. It was kind of like the early take on what Asteroids became. But yeah, 78 is when Space Invader comes out. It's like really one of the first games that has sprites in it. And it also is an evolution of what Pong is and what Breakout is specifically. So it is, you have a ship at the bottom of the screen and you are shooting aliens as they come down on the screen. And there's a lot of things that this game added into the video game canon that became super influential. It's not only that this game was the first shoot 'em up or like shmup, but it's also the first game that kept your high score. It was the first game that introduced lives, or it popularized the idea of lives in video games. It is the first game that really builds upon concepts to make the games more interactive. So as you shoot space invaders, they speed up, and that's from your actions are influencing how the gameplay changes. And that's one of the first games that does that. And at the same time, as you shoot the aliens, the music speeds up.
I was going to say, this is music, one of the first games music, to have dynamic music, isn't it?
Right, right, exactly. So the music speeds up as you are shooting aliens. So all of this is like super, super influential on what video games would eventually become.
I think to me, like, the biggest mechanic that this game has is like the destructible obstacles hanging above your little like sprite. I don't, what are they supposed to be, like houses or bunkers or whatever?
Yeah, bunkers.
And that, yeah, like, they're... over time, you can poke your own hole through them. You can, you know, you have to balance where you're, you know, taking this, like, the shots on each of your bunkers. Like, I think that, to me, was the most sort of revolutionary, like, mechanic in this game.
Really, more than the like you shooting the enemies and them speeding up and the music speeding up, because
I think it opened, like, it was not just there was a best way to do it. It was like you would have your own way to do, like, your own strategy.
That's true. Yeah, like shooting through the bunkers is like kind of a next
and like each
strategy for this game.
It seems like there's a simple game. There's enough room for like five different people to have five different approaches.
I would also say too, this is one of the first games where the bad guy shot back at you.
Yeah.
That's interesting, really. Wow.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Breakout, it's a ball, right? It's a paddle.
Right.
So, like, comparing the games that came before this to this game is, like, this was, like, the... For me, I think of Super Mario 64 as being, like, such a revolutionary game. When people saw this game, they were like, holy shit, this is a... We are now in the future when they saw this game.
Didn't the guy who developed this, and I don't know much about this, didn't he have to, like, kind of basically create, like, didn't, like, when he was, like, designing this game, like, he basically had to, like, invent, like, all sorts of new technology to create this game that, like, later was, like, basically implemented in, like, every major arcade game going forward, like, on a tech level?
He did a lot on the tech end. I don't know if it was incorporated into a lot of different arcades, but he had to basically come up with a lot of stuff from scratch, and he had to do a lot of stuff where he was taking bits and pieces from various different arcade games and pulling them together in order to make his own type thing, because what he was doing was so different at the time. One of the things that's kind of crazy about this game is that the speed of the aliens isn't programmed into it. It's based upon the hardware limitations. And when I say that, what I mean is that as you kill an alien, the hardware will speed up because the hardware has limitations on the number of sprites it can handle.
It's so always going as fast as it can.
Yeah, it's always going as fast as it can.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
And yeah, so he designed it that way. Yeah. It's not like that was like a coincidence that those two things changed. He designed it based upon how the system reacted. So it's
that's very cool.
Yeah, the game's super interesting. It might not on the surface of it seem like it's super interesting, but just everything around it and what became after it makes this game like super, super influential. There are, just in terms of like, jumping ahead a little bit, but in terms of legacy, Shigeru Miyamoto, Hideo Kojima, John Romero, John Carmack, all have cited Space Invaders as a like very, the like Shigeru Miyamoto and Hideo Kojima in particular have said this is the first game they played. First video game.
Did they have many other options though?
I mean, it's true, right? But that's the thing. The thing is that like in Japan, Pong was not as big as it was here. Right. Pong was huge here. And to put it into perspective a little bit, how this game was big in Japan versus here, in the US, Space Invaders shipped 60,000 arcade units. In Japan, which is, what is it, a third the size in terms of population as the US, they shipped 200,000 arcade machines in Japan compared to 60,000 in the US.
Hmm.
It led to the urban legend that it created the 100 yen shortage when it was popular there, but that's not entirely true. They were just minting less.
Is that
they were minting minting less coins coincidentally at the same time. So the urban legend goes that like Space Invaders mania in Japan caused the shortage, but it really didn't cause the shortage. But I guess you could say there's a factor.
They like figured that out fairly recently too, which is funny. But yeah, so I mean, you have to defeat. The aim is to defeat in each level 5 rows of 11 aliens, partially protected. We mentioned by 5 barriers. This game, the arcade game, features a flipper, and it's not a like a joystick or anything like that. It's a like little dial you swing back and forth and you hit the fire button. I should also mention too, this is one of the first cocktail cabinet games, and that's kind of one of another reason why it was popular in Japan, is because those can fit in more places than the stand-up arcades.
Huh. Was interesting. Were there certain like developers or publishers that, do you know, they were the ones that pushed the cocktail machines, or because like I always think of like Pac-Man when I think of a cocktail machine,
right? So I don't know, that's a good great question. I think they just provide like 2 different schematics and people can pick them off of like a catalog back then, but yeah, I think the big thing that immediately came out of this game, obviously there are shooter games that kind of copied exactly what this game does, and I can think of like Xevious or like any of the 8-bit or 16-bit shoot 'em ups.
Yeah, like, but Galaga and like
Galaxian.
Those are kind of like the next evolution.
Mm.
Yes, absolutely. But also you should mention that kind of what comes out of this immediately is the high score craze. So in the late 70s, early 80s, there were like the guys that were in King of Kong. I forget what the guy's name, Billy Mitchell. And like people around him that were like the people that were the high score. Twin Galaxies arcade scoreboard comes into existence. And like that would not have happened if this game did not exist, because this game popularized the notion of high scores. Hmm. And this was actually the first game to keep your high score. So if, as long as you don't unplug the machine, your high score will always be displayed.
So like Breakout did have an arcade machine?
It did have an arcade machine, yes.
And it didn't save your score or like have a high score?
No.
Wow. It's wild.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
building on the legacy of this a little bit, this is a little bit of a tangent, but a personal tangent. The two things that I always think about when I think about Space Invaders, there's an episode of Futurama where there are aliens invading Earth, and Fry has spent so much time in the arcades as a kid that he realizes he's uniquely suited to repel this invasion, because it's like a Space Invaders invasion, and all the aliens are coming down in like lines very slowly, and he's like picking them off, and then he like makes some classic mistake from the game, and they land on Earth, and Earth is taken over by aliens, and he's like, ah, man, yeah, I never got past that part in the game either. And
you know what's super fucked up about that, Steve, is they that? Have you ever seen the movie Pixels?
No, I haven't.
They like shot for shot steal that scene in Pixels.
Unbelievable.
Except it's not Space Invaders, it's Centipede, I think.
Oh, wow. And the other thing is that when I go to like barcades now, so like there's Lucky Strike here in Boston, there are the souped up new versions of Space Invaders where you have like a turret that you're sitting down and you're aiming at the screen.
Where it's like a rave.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like this giant wall of like neon lights and like Space Invaders coming down, and you have like this ray gun, and it's like it's two players, so you can sit next to each other, and you're just aiming your cannon at the Space Invaders, and you can like fire like bombs and stuff, and like, you know, is that an Asteroids where you can shoot bombs? I forget what other arcade game, but it's like it definitely draws some of the influence there. But that is like the go-to game whenever I go to one of those barcades. I'm like, I need to play that at some point tonight, and there's always a line. And it's like all these years later, it's a new version of Space Invaders, but it's still like a staple of the barcade.
Yeah, we have a like a kid's Fire tablet, and somehow my son downloaded Space Invaders on there at one point. I was like, oh, my son, my pride and joy, I can't believe you did this, and you're a year and a half old. So yeah,
across
still,
generations, you know,
it's everywhere. I mean, you can find this game everywhere, literally everywhere.
Yeah, like this
it's on like every console.
I guess this will kind of touch into our legacy conversation. I mentioned to my wife earlier that like we were recording tonight, and I was like, oh yeah, one of the games we're doing is Space Invaders. Like, my wife is like, as far as I know, has like never played a video game outside of like maybe Mario Brothers or something like that with her, like her brother when they had Nintendo growing up. And she was like, oh, Space Invaders, like I used to love playing that game like in the pizza shop that was like by my house when I was a kid. And I think it's just one of those games that just like just everybody, including, you know, probably even Mike's grandmother, as Matt, you know, intimated that like this is just like a game that everyone's played. And like, you just don't find many games like that that have like such a legacy and such a reach like this.
Especially games from the late 70s.
Mm. Right. I would also say, too, this game was the first, in quotes, killer app of the Atari 2600. So the Atari 2600 came out with the first wave of games and was sort of popular, but by 1980, they released Space Invaders, and Atari consumer sales jumped from 119 million the year before to the year after Space Invaders was put out to 200 million. In 1981, the consumer sales jumped to 800 million. Space Invaders for the Atari 2600.
Wait, 800 million?
That seems.
Yes.
Is that real? That seems like.
Are you sure? Close to 800,000.
I would.
No, Atari 2600, yeah.
800 million?
Yes.
Isn't that more? Many, do you mean worldwide or?
So this isn't just. I'm not saying Space Invaders. I'm saying Atari's consumer sales after this game was released. So within 3 years, it went from 119 million to 800 million in revenue.
You're talking about dollars.
Oh,
okay.
I
thought you were talking about units.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
Is that like twice the population?
So yeah, so $800 million in revenue, but this game sold 200 million units. So Space Invaders sold 200 million different copies on the Atari 2600. And it was like basically the game that pushed Atari 2600 into like mainstream status. And the port's pretty fucking good. It's not bad. It's very similar to what the actual game is. The sprites are a little bit bigger, but and the movement is a little different, but it's still a very good port for what it is.
I just wanted to kind of circle back to a little bit of like the background to it, because, you know, this game came out in the 70s, and I was reading about this and like just like kind of the different concepts that it went through. Like, it being a space game was actually kind of not the original idea. I think they kind of like they were kind of going back and forth, like, what should you be shooting back against? And at one point, it was going to be people, but they decided that was immoral. And
was it the Russians at some point?
No, I think it was. I don't remember that. But I was, you know, I don't know. I'm big on lore and background. So for us in the lore front, I'm a little sad that these aliens don't have names and stuff like that. Because even like fucking Bubble has lore, but this game doesn't. But
Pac-Man has lore.
Yeah,
there's clearly some sort of hierarchy, you know, because you got like certain aliens up front and then other aliens in the back.
Well, some of them are
societal hierarchy.
Some of them are supposed to be inspired by like War of the Worlds and like the overall concept, like Space Battleship Yamato was big at the time, and Star Wars had obviously just come out at the time, and like that kind of what I read was like that kind of influenced like a lot of the design of like the creatures and the concept.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars came out in, what, 77 or 78?
77.
And this game, 77, right? So this game comes out in 78, so that's, like, top of mind. Space Battleship Yamato also came out in, like, 77 or 76.
Yeah.
Has anybody seen Space Battleship Parts Yamato?
I know of it, but I've never seen it.
No. I watched the movie. It's pretty, like, it's basically, like, the inspiration for so much space anime.
It's like a World War II battleship that flies through space, right?
Yeah, basically. But, I mean, if you look at Gundam, and if you watch a lot of Gundam, which I have, it's basically the template for Gundam.
I've seen, so it's funny. I've seen the parts that have been stolen from that movie that were dumped into Gamera Super Monster, which came out in the late 70s, which is horrendous. But
they also made a U.S. version of it. It's like Star Blazers, I think, is what the name of it was, or something like that. So we're way off topic here, but
in StarCraft, the battleships like fire a big cannon that's called the Yamato gun. So
well, that's probably because of it might be because of that, but it's also the biggest battleship in World War II is the Yamato for Japan. So the Emperor Yamato, is that what his name was, right?
Well, Emperor Hirohito, right?
Oh. Yes, that's true.
I don't know. His other name might have been Yamato. Who knows?
Yeah, it was Hirohito. See, this is the nice part of social distancing is that I can easily look things up online while we're talking about it, as opposed to just like scrolling through my phone.
Yeah, what's Yamato? Let's look it up.
It's named after the ancient Japanese Yamato province.
Oh, there you go.
The ship.
So...
So this game is, we mentioned it's ported everywhere. One of the interesting things that I found in doing the research, and I love my Nintendo Entertainment System, and I always thought it was weird that this game never came out there, but it did come out on the Famicom in Japan in 1985, and I would assume they didn't port it to the US because it was probably looked old, and they were trying to show like new looking stuff at that time, but... There could be a million reasons why they didn't port that game. But it plays differently from the arcade, and it's a little bit harder. I know, Chris, you tried it a little bit.
Yeah, I think the Famicom version. This just because of the Famicom setup, from what I understand, like the sprites for the aliens are just a little bit smaller than what they're supposed to be. But also...
Right, and they move a little quicker, too.
And I didn't know this. If you get past 8 waves in the Famicom version, it switches to... what was the actual title? It's like Space Invaders, the second part, or something awkward like that. Like it's
the second part.
It's like there's like a Space Invaders part 2 that it's essentially the same sort of game, but like some of the aliens, like when you shoot them, they split into two and like their behavior changes a little bit. And the Famicom one is actually both of those games in one. And you have to but you have to clear 8 waves to unlock it.
Interesting. There's also the have you guys heard of the Game Boy version where you can put it into Super Game Boy and it doesn't just act like a... So if it's Super Game Boy for Super Nintendo, if you put in Game Boy games, some of them would be colorized,
right?
And some of them would have different backgrounds,
but not
so it'd
like
be custom to the
Game Boy color. There would be like a filter over that,
right?
Almost.
Right, yeah. But so the Game Boy version of Space Invaders, you put it into the Super Game Boy, actually access this as a different game, so you can play different types of Space Invaders on the Super Game Boy that you can't if you just have a Game Boy. Which is interesting. I think it takes
advantage.
You're
telling me you need different versions of Space Invaders that are better than Space Invaders to make this game more fun?
Well, no, just like it adds like visual enhancements, and it adds like the. So on some of the arcade cabinets, there's like an overlay that is the like a rainbow color. So you have different colors of. It's a black and white. Yeah, it's like black and white monitor, but there'll be a color overlay over it. So for this, the Game Boy version, you put in Super Game Boy, you have that for like an overlay. But there's also like different formats you can play as well of the game on that cartridge. But you can only play it on Super Nintendo because Super Nintendo adds processing power, which is hilarious. I find that super funny.
Interesting.
I'm getting the sense that Matt's grandma did not like this game, and this has been passed down through the Zabata line.
Yes, yeah.
Because he's got a bone to pick with Space Invaders. I can feel it.
Matt, you may be interested to know that there is actually an Arkanoid versus Space Invaders crossover game that came out a couple years ago. Maybe that would really wet your whistle.
If it's a fighting game, I'm down. That sounds great.
I guess.
Fighting for the fate of the planet.
This game also has like a zillion like sequels or spin-offs or ports everywhere. So, I mean, this game literally is everywhere. Steve, you were talking about how it's...
Yeah, it's not in my house, I was just going to say.
It hasn't been for three generations.
they're still making this game places, so it's... It's wild how long this game has lasted. So beyond that, I would also say a couple things about the legacy of this game is that John Romero and John Carmack, the guys who made Doom, Matt, say they were specifically influenced by this game when they made first-person shooters into a genre.
Yeah, I mean, again, they went to the arcade and there was maybe two games there.
And they weren't super off-road.
Right.
If you look, and then again, I mean, I mentioned that high scores were like a big takeaway for the early 80s influential and how that kind of like spun off into its own separate like scene. But there was also games that took a lot of ideas from Space Invaders. So we mentioned Galaxian and Galaga, which definitely are 100% influenced by this. They just look like they're clones and they just have minor upgrades around the edges. But like games like Space Invaders Missile Command that had bases took that idea from Space Invaders. Tempest took its ideas of shooting aliens from Space Invaders. So there's like a bunch of games that were just like, we're going to grab specific ideas and make them into our own game for this. So there's a lot that this game has influenced.
It pays to be like, first.
Well, it's like the first shoot 'em up game too, right? So like Ikaruga,
oh,
all those types of games, like
100%. Yes. So now this is difficult because this game is obviously a very basic game, but has a very, very deep and rich influence on video games.
Oh, here we go.
A lot of legacy.
So we're going to add it to our endless list now. It currently goes from number 1, Super Mario 64, to number 74, Jurassic Park Trespasser. This will be our 75th entry. You can find the endless list. It's in the podcast description. There'll be a link there for you to check out on our Medium page, which is constantly updated. Last week we added... What game do we add? Super Off-Road as our number 46 game. And where are we going to go this week? Where do you think this game starts?
The takes are about to get hot. Real hot around
the conversation.
Here. Matt, I think you're gonna lead the way, Matt.
Me? Yeah, Matt's going to be channeling Grandma Zabata. Let's hear what she says.
We want to hear your floor. Oh, no, we want to hear your ceiling.
Yeah, my ceiling? I certainly don't think it breaches the Tapper wall.
Shut the fuck up.
That is absurd.
That's
so, for the people listening at home, Tapper is 51 out of 73. So I think it's going to be a long discussion.
I mean, honestly think just in terms of raw like enjoyment that I get out of it, I think Tapper is an interesting game, but I think I get more enjoyment and will put one more quarter into a Space Invaders game over a Tapper game.
Yeah, and we talked about the legacy of this game. Like, Tapper doesn't have that legacy. The games above Tapper don't have this legacy.
Yeah,
Tapper was in Wreck-It Ralph 2. That's his legacy.
Right.
I mean, legacy to me is this nebulous kind of qualitative concept that I think
luckily,
is hard.
We live in the nebula.
I think
hard to apply to a ranking. Like, I think this game is on the bottom end of quality of games on this list.
I don't think we've adequately explored what each of us liked or did not like about playing this game. And I think maybe we'll understand better if Matt explains why he does not like this game.
Well, I don't not like it. I just think it has a low ceiling. I think it's a simple game. It fits, in my opinion, in the early 80s, obviously late 70s, like arcade era. And I think those games are only so good. Like, I don't think it's possible of a game with that tech in that time can be better than something like, you know, Diablo or Street Fighter or something like that.
I get more enjoyment out of playing this game than I do Diablo, just on the surface.
Yeah, you got to put these games in context too. Like, I mean, obviously we're doing that, but like, you know, these games had to exist before a game like Diablo or, you know, whatever. Mega
yeah,
Man
obviously.
2. You go up the list, like. That, you know, you have to walk before you can run.
Well, I mean, I've said my piece. That. How high do you guys think it goes then?
That's a good question.
I was more
you're
looking,
right. It is a simple game.
I was more looking at like the bubble range,
which is 32. I mean, you're telling me this game's better than God of War or Bayonetta or DuckTales?
I think this game rises up the list purely based on legacy. Like, not based on, like, its discrete mechanics and it being, like, standalone great game. It's not. But it paved the way, and it set in motion all of these pieces where it's like, oh, people can make different types of games now. And for all the reasons Mike detailed earlier in the podcast, like, it's a very important game.
Sure, I just think legacy then means that the older a game is, the more of a bias, you know, or weight it gets in favor of it being...
Yeah, I think that there's diminishing returns on that. We can't let legacy run wild here, but
yeah,
it's important.
But I would say also that there are games from the 80s, the early 80s, that you have no idea what they are because they have no legacy. And I mean, we're putting them on here because largely because of their legacy, a lot of these games. So, like, for example, have you heard of a game called Food Fight?
I've heard of it. I can't imagine. I'm picturing Burger Time, and I know it's not Burger Time.
It looks nothing like Burger Time. But that game you know nothing about, and there's really not a lot of history around it. So when that game gets added to the list, so it's just purely going on the list by gameplay. There's some cases where yes, there.
You're telling me this game is better than Paperboy?
Putting the legacy part aside, I guess for full disclosure, my favorite arcade game is Galaga, and this is basically like the grandfather to it. But it's like I enjoy the basic arcade shoot 'em ups like this because of just the first couple waves are kind of easy, and then it's like as like the tension grows, as they're getting faster, like. I get like a lot of enjoyment out of like the tension of trying to clear those harder, more advanced setup, aggressive
levels.
There's
good replayability.
And I feel like.
And as I said before, you can like preserve certain bunkers. Like you could make firing lanes in each of the bunkers for like different waves and things like that.
Well, you have to pick off the enemies strategically too, because if you're not taking off the enemies like at the bottom of the line and you're picking off enemies kind of randomly, they're going to speed up and they're going to hit your bunker and you're going to lose. Like there's, you know, the smallest bit of strategy, but there is a little bit of strategy.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask what everyone's strategy was, because mine was I would try to attack the sides first when I could. And then, like, when, like, it just wasn't possible to attack, like, the two rows on the outside, that's when I would try to pick off, like, the front row, because it would give you more time by picking out the sides.
Yeah. I try to pick off the front row, but then I try to, like, in rapid succession after I take one off the front row, I try to take off the two behind it, too. But I'm essentially aiming for the closest row to me.
Hmm.
The one thing about this game, too, is that the left and the right sides of it, of the aliens coming down... are the only places where you'll those first and last rows are the only places that you can't shoot all the time because they drift in and out of your firing line.
Yeah, so every time just make a tunnel in one of my bunkers and then just time hitting shots where people move into my shots, basically.
How we didn't talk about high scores. We talked about the fact that this has high scores, but did anybody play this game before this pod and record their high score from doing it? Because I just played it for a little while today, and I got 16,040. And that was the 10 minutes that I played it.
I can't tell you.
I did not. I should. I
wrote it down. I was like, this is good content for the pod.
When we do Galaga, I will definitely make it a point to do that because every bar I go to that has a Galaga machine in it, I like pretty much go on a quest to get the high score on that Galaga machine before I leave.
I'm pretty sure the house record on the Space Invaders machine here at my household is either 28,000 or 2,800, whatever. It's one of those, but that's the house record. Is. Yeah,
800 million or
whatever.
800,000.
This was whatever the Flash version that I found on Google that I played earlier.
So, Mike, where do you haven't really, I guess, chimed in as to where you, like, I said Bubble Bobble is, like, because I view it as kind of, like, similar sort of repetitive,
well, first off,
arcade-y type games, but...
I want to hear where you guys were placing it first off, because I am obviously incredibly biased on this game, and I never thought I'd be biased about Space Invaders, but I just think it's the fact that it's this game is one of the only games on this list that I'll say is not cheap, especially for an arcade game. Like, it has a set rules.
You mean where, like, the odds are stacked against you?
Yeah, or like the AI doesn't like just completely right. fuck you up. It's like there are set rules, and they go by set rules every time. And sure, they'll shoot at you sometimes, and it'll be like, "Oh fuck, you shot at me," but it's fair. It's like not an unfair game whatsoever, and it never tries to be unfair. And I think it's put together incredibly well. I don't think there's a lot of bugs or anything like that where you're getting fucked up a lot. I think some of the ports might have that, but the arcade machine is like a very, very solid experience, especially for the time that it came out.
I think what's tripping me up right now is that if we were to put this game fairly high up on the list, I'm not saying that we were, but we will, but I'm looking at the top half of this list and I don't see a similar kind of like arcade, like legacy important game that we can compare it to. Like some of those are kind of just grouped down like we did with Super Hang-On Super Off-Road. Like they're in this like arcade range of like the 40s to high 40s to low 50s or so. But it feels like it should go higher just based on legacy.
Yeah, and we talked about Bubble Bobble, and Chris brought that up. I think this game goes higher than Bubble Bobble because Bubble Bobble is a Taito game that would not exist without Space Invaders. Taito also makes Space Invaders.
Quite literally, yes. I mean, you know, when it comes to, like, I mean, I'm going to recognize I'm in the minority when it comes to God of War. Like, I can kind of take or leave God of War. Bayonetta, which is number 30, I've just never played it, so I can't really chime in on that. Skipping ahead a little bit, 26 is Dragon Quest, and I don't think I could go. I can't go above Dragon Quest, personally. I think as the resident RPG guy, I guess. But I kind of look at the games that are below Bubble Bobble. Like, I don't know. I mean,
you're telling me that Space Invaders goes above Call of Duty.
I was looking at that earlier too. Really? I don't know about that.
1,000%.
Yeah,
Call of Duty is 34 forever.
That game does not hold up very well.
It holds up okay. Let's slow our roll here.
Yeah.
Space Invaders holds up better than that game.
I don't know about
for the time period.
Well, okay, yeah, fair. We've talked about Tetris as being the number one game on this list before, and like I know Tetris has like layers of strategy and depth to it.
Oh, I don't think Tetris is number one.
I don't know. I feel like I've heard maybe it's just an aside while we're not on the pod, but Tetris going pretty high up there.
What's the eventual number one you're talking about? Like when every game is on this list?
Yeah, it being one of the top ranked games.
We've never had that hypothetical conversation actually on the podcast, I don't think.
No, we have not.
But we think about that a lot for people that are listening. We talk about what is actually the number one game a lot.
So
especially when, we're trying to come up with episodes where we're like, what is gonna be our new number one, and we're definitely gonna do it this week, and we don't actually end up doing it. Those are fun.
We've had this conversation in bits and pieces before.
Yeah, yeah. I would be fine with this game as number 32, pushing Bubble Bobble down.
Wow.
We're gonna say God of War is one game better than Space Invaders. I don't know.
I don't think God of War is a great game.
I'm certainly not gonna say that.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I would go above. I mean, God of War is what it is. You know, like, I'd rather play Devil May Cry than God of War, personally. That first one. And like I said,
we have to add that game at some point.
I've just never played Bayonetta, so I can't really opine on that. But DuckTales is a lot of fun, but
this is where we make our money, guys. These are the hard choices in this list.
It's not a very hard choice for me. I say 62 right below Paperboy.
Oh my god.
There are so many people that must be like screaming at us, like through their headphones right now, like listening to this.
Our listener is losing his mind.
I mean, I accept it's a better game than Thrasher, Skate and Destroy. I accept it's a better game than Zone of the Enders, but I don't accept that it's a better game than Eternal Darkness at 54.
Look, if you,
oh my god, I would so much rather play Space Invaders than Eternal Darkness.
Yeah, I think Space Invaders has to go higher up.
All right.
So where do we put it?
Are we going past God of War? Are we going past Bayonetta? You guys played Bayonetta. You tell me, what's the deal there?
Well, listen, it seems like they're dragging their feet here, and they don't want it even to go above Call of Duty. So do you think I think it's personally, I can't put it below Bubble Bobble on this list.
I think wherever it lands, it should land above Bubble Bobble. I would say.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Bubble Bobble, we're going to say that's better than Space Invaders? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I refuse to let a game that's called Bubble Bobble be better than Space Invaders. Come on now.
I mean, I just don't know.
Let's just put it at number one and we'll just live in that world. We'll just do it.
Matt, you seem very upset about everything.
Nah, I mean, I just... Even Madden NFL 2004, you're telling me that a sports game with the variety of a game like that and the modes of a game like that that you could probably just play forever is 20 games worse than Space Invaders?
But could you play that game forever? And would you not want to come back to Space Invaders more?
I don't know. Like, you can get pretty deep into, you know, doing your own franchise modes. And I think just naturally a game in 2003 is more often than not better than an arcade game from 1978.
That game's not an online game, right? So you can't. So you're playing couch co-op with somebody if you want to play with somebody. But once you get into that game, there's a point where you reach with that game where you can just beat the hardest difficulty because you know exactly what they're going to do. And most sports games from that time period are like that. So basically, you can cheese the game after you play like a couple dozen hours of it. Because that's what I used to do all the fucking time, especially with baseball games. Football games was certainly something you can do it with. But like Space Invaders is like fair. There's not like it gets harder. It gets, once your skill level goes up, the levels that you'll progress through will go up. It's a solid, solid game.
I think it's a cool game. I just think it's a game that could be made, you know, today by a middle school kid with, you know, a basic programming. And I just think that by default, there's a ceiling to that.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. But you have to remember that it was not made by a middle school kid today.
It was made as one of the earliest video games
in 1978.
This list is being made in 2020. This is a
42-year-old game.
Right, exactly.
42.
Yep, so. People's grandmas were playing it.
I heard that.
Where were you 42 years ago?
Oh, I just don't want to get into it.
You're in your daddy's nutsack is where you were, boy.
You're just a glimmer in your papa's eye.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to just be wrong on this. I just think what I think.
Mike, how do you feel about it being better or worse than God of War? Let me ask that. Because it seems like we're kind of keying in on this area.
Obviously, God of War is a bigger experience. It's from 2005, so there's a lot more you can do with a game than a game from 1978. It's like, when I think about it, it would take me 5 years to put the amount of time that I put into God of War that I've put into Space Invaders from a purely time perspective. But at the same time, like, after playing through the experience of God of War, I, like, never want to play through the first God of War game again. I'll play through God of War 2 and the latest God of War, God of War 3, etc. And I'm curious where that story goes, because it's a very interesting story. But I'm going to pick up Space Invaders, and I'm going to play it again, and I'm going to keep playing it for a long time. So, and I could always go back to it for a quick game. So, they're two just completely different experiences, and how you compare them, how do you compare those two things? It's tough. And I think God of War also has an influence, and it has a legacy, and it has created a series that's pretty substantial. So, I personally would be happy putting this game directly below God of War at 32 and pushing Bubble down.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, you know, I don't think God of War is all that great, but I'm good. I'm good with that.
It is a more advanced game.
Is it more that you think it's slightly better than Bubble Bobble?
Me? Yeah. Are you asking me?
Whoever.
I think it's better than Bubble Bobble. Bubble Bobble's fun, but I think Space Invaders is a different kind of fun, where it's like, I really like that, like, when the difficulty really ramps up and it gets fast and tense, like, I like that, like, that tension that you get from, like, those sort of older arcade gimmicky stuff. Like, Bubble Bobble doesn't really have that. God of War is honestly a game I bought used from GameStop, like, a decade plus ago for $5 and feel like I got ripped off. But and Bayonetta I just never played, but it sounds like it's really fun. But I can't really comment on it. Like, DuckTales is the next game at 29, and DuckTales is a great game, but I go like, Space Invaders I think a little bit more fondly of. You know, I could kind of keep going again until we get to Dragon Quest at 26, but I also kind of know I'm just kind of like making kind of like incremental arguments over all these games. Is like, I'm just saying, like, this is my personal preference kind of coming into play here at this point.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, it's hard to go above Dragon Quest because it's got the influence argument and it's like a deeper game. So, like, that stops Space Invaders for me. But, I mean, even at, like, Guru, Mark of the Wolves, and DuckTales, DuckTales is, like, a premier platformer that does what they do really well. And Guru is, like, for me, it's, like, a very, very good top-tier fighting game.
Yeah, I never played it, so I just don't know.
They're, like, the peaks of their genre, right? And then, so they're tough to go above them. I don't know if DuckTales picks peak of the genre, but it's a very good game.
It's certainly a peak of 1989 platforming, for sure.
I would dispute that with you, because if you look up above the list, Mega Man 2 also came out in 1989, sure, and that game's better.
But, I mean, if we're talking about it being a peak at all, ever, then it's got to be a peak at the time it came out, right?
Right. Well, it's, like, near the top, right?
Right.
I think we should just put it at 32, because I think we can have endless arguments about this. And it's not like I think God of War is like that much of a better game, but I think it's just the whole experience of it. It's the series that it spawned, how it's still in the conversation today, and how its legacy is only going to increase, I believe, just given the fact of what the latest one that came out did. So I think Space Invaders is good as our 32nd game on this list currently.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of seeing how far the legacy of Space Invaders will take it right now, and we're getting to a point with God of War where we're kind of entering into like the modern era of games and all that they can do, like graphically and technically, and saying like, okay, the legacy only takes it that far. Like, it is this very simple arcade game, and we're going to tap it out there. And I'm okay with that.
Chris, are you okay with that?
I'm good with that.
All right.
Matt?
So we have our new number three. Yeah. I'm not even going to ask. I'm not asking that.
I bet we didn't think this was going to be a 50-minute pod.
Well, I think there's a game coming up that I think I'm probably going to be filling Matt's role on that game that we're going to be discussing probably in one of the next few episodes.
Oh, boy.
I wonder what it could be.
Big tease.
I wonder what it could be.
But yes, we have a new number 32
does
game.
Does it have to do with Space Invaders?
Yeah, yes, it does. Actually, literally, yes.
Just as I suspected.
So, is this like exactly the middle? No, it's not. It's close. But it's not exactly the middle.
Close, but not exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's if we had 64 games on our list, then this would be our midway point. But we don't. We have 75, so... Our number 32, Space Invaders. Welcome to the endless list. You are one of the most influential games on this list, and I tried to push you up higher. At least you don't have to scroll the screen on our ranking spreadsheet that we have.
Depending on...
Thank God.
Depending on your device you're using.
It's true. Above the fold. That's important.
Above the fold. All right, guys. Thank you for your contributions, except for Matt, Chris, Steve...
It was overdue.
We're going to try to be back next week with another episode. If we can figure out some technical issues around some people who played the game that we're going to be talking about, then I think we'll do that game. And this will be a very abstract thing for people who don't know what game we're talking about. But yes, we have technical issues.
I'm not even sure what we're talking about, but yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah. But yes. Hopefully we'll be back next week. You can check out the complete endless list on our Medium page. It's also linked in the podcast description. You can subscribe on Google Play, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you find your podcasts. And once again, thank you guys for being on. And we'll be back with another episode.
Hey, anytime. See you guys.